Starting off, we are now in this week's parasha reading about Parshas Korach, the Korach rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu, against Hashem, when you read it correctly. And fascinatingly, the Gemara in Moed Katan 16a learns the practical halachas on how a court is supposed to act toward a future potential litigant defendant from the laws over here. Amazing. It's not just a story. It's a story that has laws. So on 16a it says it. Rava said, from where do we know the regulation? The rule, the regulation that we send a messenger of the court. That means you summon someone. The easiest explanation is summon someone. You summon someone to come to court. Hey, no such thing. Maybe not. Now, the easy interpretation of what it's supposed to mean is two things you learn from this. First of all, that the court judges themselves don't have to go. They can send someone. And two is you only have to pay attention when a court-sanctioned authority requests your appearance at jury duty. But if your friend comes up and says, I'm taking you to court. Okay, I'm summoning you to court. A citizen's arrest does not, I don't think there's such a thing as a citizen court, but a citizen's type style arrest court does not work. The statement is, from where do you know such a rule that I just told you that the court can send someone? So it says, you learn it from this week's parasha. And it says, and Moses sent to Koldasam Vaviram, the sons of Eliav. That is three, which is in the parasha, Numbers 16:12. I'm reading the words in our scrolling list now. 16:12. Yeah. It says, Moshe sent forth to summon Dasan Vaviram. And they said, we're not going to go up. Is it not enough that you have brought us up from a land flowing with milk and honey to cause us to die in the wilderness? They're refusing. But the fact is that Moshe did not go himself. And the fact is, Aaron HaKohen, if they would say they were going against Aaron HaKohen, didn't go himself. Maybe Hashem was the master. But either way, they got sent the message, and that applies today as well. Practical law, we don't have really such a concept of real classic Jewish courts, but even today, you can't bring your Beis Din to you, and the Beis Din has to come, like out the white beard, doesn't knock on your door. That's the first law from the here. But I'm finished with it. And where do you know that we summon him to attend in person? Because it says that Moshe said, be thou and all of thy congregation before the Lord. So that means you have to come in person. When we summons you, we're telling you, you might be able to come with an attorney present, maybe yeah, maybe no, but you have to be there as well. From where do we, hold on. From where do we appear before a great personage or something else? Now goes a tremendous one. These are all the laws. I'm just skipping some of them. You have to tell the guy a specific time. Because why? Moshe Rabbeinu told him, come tomorrow. So you have to send them a court and say, come to court. When you come to court? Come to court when? Again, a lot of these make sense now, but we always say this about Judaism, about many things. We live in a post-world where things make sense. But who knows what it looked like before? We said it a few weeks ago. The most classic example is that Boaz and the story of Ruth. Maybe I'll say a little bit of that. I think I put it into a Gillian, actually. Boaz came, did we speak about this? Boaz came to the field that he owned, and Ruth was in the field when they meet in the beginning of chapter 2. And before the story goes, Boaz asking their lead head sharecropper, who is that woman there? It first has his introduction. Boaz walks into the field and says, guys, in proper today, we're at Shalom Aleichem. He uses a different Hebrew term, Hashem Melechem Shalom Aleichem. And then starts the conversation. And the Talmud, Mishnah, discusses, well, what's with the Shalom Aleichem thing? And the Gemara says, yeah, it became a big Kiddush. The Boaz had come from the court system. He was the head of the generation, leader of the court system. And he came to court and he instituted a new rule. The new rule was that you're allowed or should, question, greet people with God's name. The word Shalom in Shalom Aleichem is God's name. In simple halachic terms, you are not allowed to say Shalom Aleichem in a bathroom. If someone's name is Shalom, we discussed it probably 2 decades ago. Stephen and Iman, 2 decades ago we discussed it. What do you do if someone's name is Shalom when it comes to the bathroom? And the question is, if today's bathrooms are being considered real bathrooms, we're not going to law today. But the Talmud says that Shalom Aleichem created the idea that now, okay, since he said Shalom Aleichem, he was now able to meet Rus. That connection, see Gillian Zera Emes this year, year 2 in Shavuos. But the idea was, I saw someone say a great idea. When we think now and say, oh, he said Shalom Aleichem. So we're like, okay. Yeah, we don't realize, because we're living in the post world of where everyone says Shalom Aleichem to each other. We don't look at it as like, is that such a big deal? Yeah, back then it was you needed a high court to get together and make a decision. And until then, if someone probably would have said Shalom Aleichem without the day before, he would have got punished. What are you using God's name in vain on a simple thing like saying hello to someone? God's name was specified to be said in the sanctuary. He came along. Same thing now. Some of these rules we look at now as obvious might not have been so obvious. It could be prior to this time, prior to Korach being taught this way, it could be you would assume that the court itself has to come. Or you could assume that your neighbor could insist you go to court. Or you could say, show up to court without a specific date. You could have assumed all these things. But the Torah is learning practical laws from this story as well. Not finished. And therefore we learn these laws. And again, everywhere in the Torah is infinite, but here we're learning practical laws from a story as well. But here goes the one we're going to discuss tonight. Then it says, we'll find it here. And where do we know that if one behaves terribly toward the court's messenger and the latter comes and reports it, that it's not a problem? That means, normally, if I say something bad about official, I can't go say it to Walter. I can't go to Yorkiva and tell you what he said. No way, not allowed. That's called Lashon Hara. I don't do that. What about if someone insults or speaks badly, Lashon Hara, against the court-sanctioned messenger? Here it says it's allowed. How do you know? Because it says in the Pasuk number 3, A3, which is, same one, 12. No, it must be a typo here. Because it says like this. Moses set up to summon Dasan Vavirim. And they said, we shall not go up. Who's saying this now? The Torah or they're reporting back? It is not enough that you brought us up from the land flowing with milk and honey. Moreover, you did not bring us to the land flowing with milk and honey. You took us in this field. Even if you would gouge our eyes out, we're not coming. And this distressed Moses greatly. The Talmud, on the simple interpretation of the how, learns that this was what the spies reported back. That means all these words, who was there? Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there when this happened. He sent an emissary to their camp and said, okay, guys, show up. And then it says what their response was. Who is telling us what this response was? It says, whatever, who is telling us, right after it says, Moshe was very stressed. Why was he stressed? That means he knew the response. How do you know the response? Because they told him. How do you know the letter tells him? That's called Lashon Hara. The answer is that a court-sanctioned officer learned from these words that one who behaves terribly toward the court's messenger and the latter reports it is not deemed slander. He was allowed to go do it. Now, you have to know, and the commentators, we're not going to that direction tonight, maybe a different time. How do you know that they told the Moshe Rabbeinu? Maybe they didn't tell anything to Moshe Rabbeinu. They came back empty-handed. They came back and said, or they said nothing. They didn't say all the details. Maybe they just came back and said, sorry. Is that called Lashon Hara? They have to report back. Would you know this? But the Talmud's taking its face value that they came back, reported Lashon Hara. That's told about Lashon Hara. And you don't see they got punished because it's allowed. Open them in a passage of Moyko. There's a famous question. Many approaches. We will try to do some tonight. Not too many. We'll try to do some. The Jerusalem Talmud. They don't have that in English here. The Jerusalem Talmud. In Peya. No word for English Peya, right? Peya is a Masechta. You have to have English for that.
Of course.
Right. Do we need that in the name? No, Peya. In chapter 1, Halacha 1. That's how it goes in Yerushalmi. It goes by laws. Chapters and laws. Chapter 1, Halacha 1, brings down some of the concepts of Lashon Hara. Discusses about when you're not allowed to speak slander about somebody else. And in there it says a fascinating thing. It says, I forgot the name, I think it's Reb Levi, don't remember offhand now, a blank rule. If someone, we're going to say Yiddish because it sounds good, is it Hebrew Yiddish? Machloikas macha. How do you say it in English? Machloikas macha means an instigator, a troublemaker, a fighter. There's no such thing as talking Lashon Hara against them. Massive leniency if you read the simple Talmud. Obviously there are going to be caveats, we'll discuss some tonight, but the Jerusalem Talmud has an open statement that says, if someone is an instigator, a terrorist in fighting, machlekes macher, you are allowed to speak ill about him. That's this Jerusalem Talmud. So some people have a simple question. Let's go back to the court-appointed messenger. How do we learn from this story that a court-appointed messenger is allowed to talk slander? Maybe no. Maybe a court-appointed messenger is not allowed to talk slander. But you know why he did not get punished over here? Because who did he report back about? Dasan Vavirim. Who are Dasan Vavirim? Machlekes machas. Instigators. Troublemakers. So if we have a Jerusalem Talmud, this is the simplicity of this question. If you have a Jerusalem Talmud that says you are legally allowed to speak Lashon Hara about instigators, and the Talmud says, you know how you know a court person could speak Lashon Hara? Because he told her what Dasan Vavirim said to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Lashon Hara. It's allowed. Why? Because court-appointed people are allowed. No, I can say court-appointed people are not allowed, but Dasan Vavirim are part of this Talmud. They're part of the instigators. They're part of the troublemakers. They're part of the no-goodniks. So where do we know that a regular court guy is allowed to do it? Maybe when a court guy walks over to a regular guy and someone does something nasty to him, take the hit. Don't report back. Whatever it means, don't report back. Details, whatever it is. How do you know it's allowed to be done? That's the bomb question asked. Now, the first answer is going to be two easy answers before we start really thinking. One is you could say these two Talmudic passages argue with each other. And the one who says a court-appointed messenger is allowed to snitch does not believe you're regularly allowed to snitch on all troublemakers. The one who holds troublemakers allowed doesn't discuss court-appointed people. Two different people. If you hold them both, you can start asking, but who said you hold them both? That's one very, very simple answer. So it's easy. Second simple answer is that this rabbi comes after this. Any person who starts with a court-appointed official is automatically considered a machlokes machan instigator. That means you are had. What happens? You're allowed to speak against instigators. Who calls what an instigator? Is your mother and stepfather instigators? That's for the other line earlier. Is your mother-in-law an instigator? I don't know. Who decides? We'll have to look up laws of instigators. One thing I'll tell you, you know, when you look at laws of instigators, you know who shows up? Any person who starts up at the court. So let's say you go over to a rabbi. He's being summoned to court. Long white beard, great rabbi, good person. And the messenger shows up and says, Rabbi, summons to court. He says, no chance with you. No way I'm going. That guy's a bum. I'm not doing it. Is he called an instigator? In general, no. But of course, this answer automatic. So the first answer is, again, once you have the automatic instigator leniency, we don't prove a court instigator leniency by Dustin Vavirim. How do we know it? They're automatically instigators. They're wearing the hat instigator. So one answer is they argue. And one answer is, no, this is teaching us this law. That means Dustin Vavirim actually were instigators. Yeah, we knew that. But it doesn't make a difference. Anyone in that position who turns down the court is automatically an instigator. Doesn't make a difference. So this law is really included in this law. Instigators you're allowed to snitch on. By the way, one of the rules of instigators, guess what? Guy starts up with the court messenger. Those are the easy two answers. Now we do some of the more slightly difficult ones. So we have a problem there. The problem again is, if a guy is considered an instigator, you're allowed to snitch. And yet we say over here, Dasan Vaviram, the court snitched. We say, yeah, because people are allowed to snitch. Court people are allowed to snitch. That's not true. Court people are not allowed to snitch. Only instigators are allowed to snitch. That was the question. So here goes a couple of different terutzim. One is, and the basic approach, I always like to say, before we get to the nuances, the basic approach is going to be that this leniency is of a regular, since people might not be watching, I realize that, since this leniency is not 100% guaranteed on instigators, it's a leniency. You are allowed to snitch on general instigators. Yes. But that leniency is not 100% carte blanche. So I can't just say, yeah, I'm going to snitch on Akiva because he's an instigator. And by the way, hate his mother. Hate his sibling, would that be allowed? Well, Akiva's an instigator. Clearly, you wouldn't allow me to make fun of his brother. Wouldn't have to do anything, right? Let's say I just want to pile on. By the way, Akiva is an instigator. I'm allowed to snitch on him. So you know why? I know that this week he's an instigator. But I want to tell you something else. You know what happened 2 years ago to Akiva? Would that be allowed? No, not necessarily. That means the laws of instigator ability to snitch on instigator has its caveats, certain limitations. But the court-appointed one will not have those same limitations, which means that the court appointed, the Gemara in Mayu Kutin in front of us is saying any court appointed official is allowed to snitch. Oh, what do you mean? Doesn't mean instigators. Yeah. If they would have only snitched this amount, six words, limited to this case, you're right. Then we'd have no proof. That's not what happened here. They did more than what would have been allowed under the umbrella of regular instigators. Regular instigators, you're allowed to snitch A and B. And we see over here the court appointed people, we'll learn how in a second, did A, B, C, and D. So why were they allowed to do A, B, C, and D? Oh, they're allowed to do A, B, C, and D because a court-appointed official is allowed to snitch more than a regular instigator thing. Because according to this answer, we're not learning that it's automatic. Every court-appointed person getting abused is facing an instigator. Yes. Yes. So, because it says you're allowed to talk Lashon Hara. I'm using the snitch instead of Lashon Hara. You're allowed to speak evil. You're allowed to speak Lashon Hara against an instigator.
They did the crime and you're telling someone else about it. That's not what those know that's what it means.
Okay. Might be according to one of the answers, but I like it. Yes. So let's go back to when I said snitch before, if anyone's listening, it means Lashon Hara, which might be one of the answers anyway. You are allowed to speak Lashon Hara against an instigator. How much you're allowed to speak against an instigator? A and B, according to what we're saying. We'll see what A and B is in a second. How much is a court-appointed official allowed to report back to the courts? A, B, C, D, and E. So how do we know now that the courts are allowed? Because they can't rely. Our question was, what do you mean? We don't have any proof from Dasa Vavirim. Because Dasa Vavirim are instigators. So of course you're allowed to snitch on them. You're allowed to report back on them. The answer is no. You would have been allowed to report back on Dasa Vavirim, A and B. But the court-appointed officials in the story of our Torah, of Korach, they reported back A, B, C, and D. So why are they allowed to do that? Because the Talmud learns. You know why you're allowed to do it? Because a court-appointed official is allowed more of Lashon Hara permissibility than the one and two.
They have a blank check.
They have more, I wouldn't say blank bank, but yes, much more of a blank check. So let's go through some of the potential different answers. And I'm not sure if each one holds the other one. Potential limitations on speaking Lashon Hara against an instigator and see where they didn't do it. So the first one's a very obvious question. Why am I allowed to speak? It doesn't say, now where do we know you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara against instigators? We know you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara, that the court appointed official can speak Lashon Hara from our this week's Pasha. That's why we're talking about this case here. We're talking about our Pasha. But where do you know that you're allowed to speak against instigators? That's a very big statement in the Jerusalem Talmud in Peah 1:1, saying, by the way, carte blanche, you could say Lashon Hara instigators. Yeah, I need a, that's, you need a source for that, by the way. What is the source? And it quotes a source.
Question from Michael Bodenheim.
Michael Bodenheim, go.
Does it need to be lit to LS?
Oh.
Or is it their carte blanche permission to speak about him?
I don't know who he's talking about, which one, but the word to LS means, does it have to be a point and a goal in speaking Lashon Hara, or is it a blank check? But I'm not sure which one of the two he was referring to. Either way, we're going to discuss. So let's go through the story of how we know the source from and see what we can do here. So the source of the Jerusalem Talmud, that you are allowed to snit, to speak Lashon Hara against an instigator, is an interesting story. David, King David, had different children from different wives. And in general, when it comes to taking over the throne, usually different children from different wives are not going to agree on who should take over the throne. Usually each person is going to assume that what? He himself should be taking over the throne. So we have a story in Navi. In Navi, in Malachim, I took a picture of the story. Kings 1, Malachim Aleph 1:14, right in the beginning of the story. So David had a son called, if we get it right, Adoniel. Adoniel was a son of Chagit. Now who did take over? We know the end of the story. Solomon, Shlomo. His mother's name was Bathsheba or Beersheba? Bathsheba, right? Now, what happened was this. Adoniel decided that he's taken over. But, you know, as we know from world politics, in order to take over, you have to get certain people on your side. Announcing that I'm taking over, that doesn't work. The famous joke from the Rebbe. Just send me a standalone clip. It's a joke either way. I don't know. That's a joke either way. But it's a clip. Send it. Maybe I'll put it into one of the shorts. There's a famous joke that a guy comes to the big Rebbe and he tells the Rebbe, listen, Rebbe, you have like 2,000 followers here. It's very impressive. Last night, that's why I thought of it just now. I had a dream. Speaking of it, I had a dream that I had 10,000 followers. What do you think? So the Rebbe said, that's great. But in order for it to be successful, you need 10,000 people to have that dream, not you. Who gets the dream? You? No. 10,000 people, yeah. Or 2,000 people in my case. So the question is, who's dreaming about what? That's how it goes. So Adoniel realized, you want to become the king, you need certain people on your side. What would be the first person you got to recruit to have a coup? Head of the army, right? You got to have the head of the army. That's a big one. You know what else you got to recruit? You got to recruit the Kohen Gadol. These are the major players that you want. And this is what happens all over, right? When we want to usurp a thing. So Adoniel went and he got Yoav on his side. Yoav ben Tzruya was the head general, and he was going to back up Adoniel against Solomon. Then he got a Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol's name was Avyasar. Got them both on the side. And they're cooing von Stauffenberg. They're cooing away. And they're trying to, you see what is it? Who cares? Yeah. And we're trying to figure it out. And then Nathan the prophet gets a vision and God informs him what's going on. You got to stop this, Nathan. So Nathan goes from a dream and he reports to the mother of Solomon. It's all in the story. He tells, listen, let me tell you what's going on. And then me and you're going to make a plan. You're going to start telling David what's going on between son A and son B from different wives. And then I'm going to come in and back you up. There's a story going on. Fine. So this rabbi in the Jerusalem Talmud says, what? Nathan just went and snitched, or said Lashon Hara, better word. But here, snitch also. He's saying Lashon Hara against these three Jewish people, Kohen Gadol, head of the army. And these are, what are you doing? Maybe you're not allowed to do that. So the answer became that yes, when it comes to a machleikus macher, insurgency, I forgot the words I used before so much. When it comes to these type of things, then Lashon Hara is allowed. Nathan the prophet did it. But now, as Bodenheim points out, it could be that the permissibility to snitch by Nathan the prophet was done with a goal in mind to stop the insurgency. And it could be, which you would assume when you're reading a prophet, because every word's $1 billion, that the leniency is limited to those words, which means he might not have been allowed to say 10 extra words. It could be he was allowed to go and tell Bathsheba, listen to what's going on. But listen to what's going on is limited to what's going on. You can't also say, maybe, I'm making up an example, that by the way, Bathsheba, when he said about this thing taking over, he also said that you don't look good in that dress. It could be that's not allowed, because that doesn't have a real goal in mind, even though it might have a goal to get her angry. But I'm saying, therefore, it's limited. So they want to say that limitation. But here, they want to say that when you look at the length, every word's $1 billion, since it's about two or three verses going on here, it doesn't work. And they want to say more. Caveat. That when you're allowed to speak, it's not just for a purpose. It's for the purpose of making peace. P-A-C-E. And when he was doing it, not Nathan, he was trying to make peace. We have to know it's between the two sons, or it's among the whole monarchy. It's different, not for now, when we do the prophets. Over here, what was the result of what they said? Moses got angry. When you hear someone got angry, Moses got angry. That's a big statement. Does that sound like they promoted peace? No. Because they didn't have to promote peace. Because the messenger of the court is not obligated to have a strict, strict goal and or a message of peace alone. That means the messenger comes back to the court. He knows the reaction is not peaceful. The reaction is going to be unpeaceful. The judges are not going to be happy. That's fine. We have a new law. We learn from the story of Korach. Even an unpeaceful gold words against the courts are allowed. Because the leniency that we're discussing in the Talmud, that we learn from the Ma'aseh of Korach, is a greater leniency than the leniency of the story of Nathan the prophet. Therefore, we added something on to work out that way. A huge answer is going to be, that's, I mean, we already have a few. We'll do one more. Right? Yeah. One more. Quick one. And it's like, unbelievable idea. Dustin Vavir, we know now, in hindsight, pretty bad people. I mean, they were instigators going back 80, 75 years. We discussed how many years it was, right? In fact, on RabbiHavna.com website that Chaskel put so much effort into, if you go on you go to the scroll down bar where it says Korach, one of those classes comes up. It wasn't on Korach, it was really on Shmois, but we brought up Korach, of the story of Dasan Vavirim, how they survived all along, how they were instigators. Okay, but let's look at Dasan Vavirim as well. They were, according to some, the taskmasters who got the physical abuse. They were the capos who took the abuse for Jews. They were the ones who complained to Moshe Rabbeinu, possibly, because they felt, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're making things worse here. Fine. They, when you start going through a lot of the stories, there are times when you can spin it for good. I don't know if they were or weren't for this conversation. That's a whole different class. But it's possible to say. We definitely say about Korach, the famous rabbis used to call the Levim, Korach Levi, used to call him the Holy Feta, Holy Uncle. They used to call Korach the Holy Uncle because they held that Korach had a lot of positive things to him. Now, and Korach was a carrier of the Aron. That was his job, open Talmud. That means from the top 10 jobs in Klal Yisrael, he's there. He's way up there. He wanted more, but he was way up there. And it could be, according to the many Hasidic sources, when Korach turned to Moshe and said, we don't need you as a leader, we're all leaders, he had real merit to that concept. And it could be when the Messianic revelation comes, there won't be a leader. We'll all be equal as leaders. So I mean, some of the stuff Korach was saying was really impressive. He was a very impressive person.
He just says a shout out to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose yahrzeit is tonight.
Tonight? No, day three, no? Gimel.
Today day three?
Today, no, but close enough.
Where he says he doesn't want a whole lot of followers, he wants a lot of leaders.
Beautiful.
And it shows out, it plays
right.
out.
Right.
About houses or leaders of the world.
So it could be, someone to say, that we said before, you need a resume. You got to go to the laws. There's laws of what's called an instigator. It's possible that at that time in Egypt, in the desert, Dustin Rivim didn't check those boxes. Yeah, maybe now we read the Torah, we know what's going on. We know the inside thoughts. But at that time, maybe not. Korach definitely had some good thoughts. 250 righteous people along with them, possibly. Dustin Vavirim would seem at times to be impressive people.
Did you say that the Red Sea split just for them?
Excellent. On RabbiHavna.com. Yeah. I don't remember when, but you put in the word Dustin Vavirim, it should come up. That the Red Sea split a second time for them. That goes to that same class. Even though they were, the question was, if 80% didn't survive the ninth plague, why did they survive? So it must be they had some good stuff to them. So the point was that on the surface, they were pretty impressive people. According to all the rabbis, you say, if we would have been there at the rebellion, we would have joined Korach. That's how impressive he was. But this is more about Dasam Avirim, but the same idea. So it could be that in the laws of Lashon Hara against instigators, we believe in that law, but Dasam Avirim don't check those boxes. And the court-appointed messenger who knew Dasam Avirim, or thought Dasam Avirim didn't check those boxes, still went to Moshe Rabbeinu and said Lashon Hara about them, and the Torah records it and doesn't say he did anything wrong. Oh, you know what that teaches us? Court-appointed officials don't need the leniency of it being Instigators. So this is what we do. We just did an opposite answer. Those are paying attention. Opposite answer. According to one of the early answers, it was everyone who's against a court-appointed official is automatically an instigator. Now we're saying, no. They did not look at Dustin Vavirman's instigators. They were not instigators. They never checked the boxes, even now, maybe not. But a court-appointed official has a leniency. And therefore, the Torah records it, and Moshe Rabbeinu got upset, but it was allowed. In hindsight, there might have been a second way. But the people at the time did that, and they were accepted. We will stop here. No, there are other approaches as well that are good ones. Thank you.